podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. It's been a little while since we've had an existential crisis in Wales, but they're never too far away, are they? And sure enough, we couldn't get to the season without one. So we're going to be dedicating the bulk of this podcast to that. The story, of course, we're referring to is this the Oakwell report that has made its way into the press this week, in no small part thanks to our good friend Steph Thomas. He was on the show last week, and Steph will be joining us soon. But he failed a late fitness test today, probably due to exhaustion this week, I imagine. So we've brought back another friend of ours from West Wales. So we've got Matt Jones with us. How you doing, Matt?
How's it going, guys? Yeah, I'm your West Wales quota, am I?
This is it. Well, we've got to be very careful of these things, you know.
Obviously, we definitely need a quota on you because it's so East Wales. Half of it is in London. That's how far east it is.
It's so East Wales that we're on the outskirts of the M25. So it's good to drag it back, Matt. And of course that beautiful Cardiff accent that you can hear there is the most Cardiff sounding man in the world, the Mighty Murph. How you doing, Murph?
I'm taking that as a compliment. Good, thanks.
As well it should.
Yeah. So some people say maybe it's the company I'm in. Some people say I haven't got much of an accent for Cardiff, but I think that's
you
probably...
do.
Yeah.
I promise you, Murph, you do.
When I get going, you know, when I have to say more than three words in a row, then it comes to the surface. But so long as I stay away from the words pint of dark at the Arms Park and all those kind of, I'm fine. Absolutely fine. Don't sound, I sound like I'm from, I don't know, the Vale of Glamorgan or something. I don't know.
There we go. Right. Well, small talk done.
Yeah.
Let's get into the meat. We've had some listeners' questions come in as well, and we will take a look at those. I suppose the first thing I'll throw this one at you, Matt, is were you particularly shocked when you kind of read through the headlines of this report?
I suppose not shocked, but just frustrated, the usual frustrations in terms of Welsh rugby. And I should probably say allegedly, shouldn't I, before I say anything else? So everything that follows what I'm going to say now follows the word allegedly. But looking at what's been, you know, reported in the press, am I right in saying this meant as little as 25 grand on this report, because
It's nothing. You're absolutely right.
I've worked with, you know, big fours and stuff like that, right? You don't get a cup of coffee for 25 grand. I did do a bit of research into this Oakwell Sports Advisory, and they listed clients as people like the Scottish Rugby Union, not great, and Derby County, who are in a financial crisis. So not great from that perspective. But just looking at it, it just feels like they've done a quick sort of income and expenditure piece on Welsh rugby and kind of worked out that dividing the cake between three rather than four gives you a bit more money. It just makes, it's just absolute nonsense. And when, you know, when the proposals is the Scarlet Ospreys piece, and obviously as a passionate Turk and a season ticket holder, it worries me that they've just worked on the principle that if you merge both teams, you'll double your fan base. You'll double your, you know, season ticket sales, but you just won't, because Turks won't travel east and Jacks won't travel west across the Lugha Bridge. It isn't going to happen. It just seems so simplistic in their approach. And I'm sure you guys are aware, you know, what was it, 2003, 2004, Connacht were going to go. You know, if Connacht had gone, you know, if you just think about how many players have come through the Connacht ranks in the last 20 years, if Ireland have done that did, you know, lost numerous players within their sort of like processes as a result of it. The other thing is that, in my eyes, if they rebrand an Ospreys Dragon, an Ospreys Scarlet amalgamation, right, whatever that new rebrand is, nobody will like it. Nobody will turn up. There'll be no synergy. There'll be no sort of bond between the fan base and that new entity, and within 2 years we'll be down to just Dragons and Cardiff, because nobody will be turning up to watch them. And I think they've said in the report that the Ospreys are at risk because of the fact that they don't own their own ground, and then obviously they're talking about Dragons because obviously they've been the poor relation. You don't need to do a report to know that. Any Welsh fan could have told you that. And if you're going to bring in something like this without restructuring, it makes absolute no sense. And am I allowed to go into rant yet, Jed? Or does Murph want to come in? Because I could just rant for hours on this one.
Shall I keep going? I'm totally behind you.
From my point of view, right, is you've got to restructure first before you make any changes. And that's the game as a whole. So, you know, underneath that sort of professional layer, you've got to look at the club structure. It's pathetic at the minute. You've got, for me, I would go Premiership, Championship, then I'd go old school, right, and have a flat structure, bring in divisions where people are just playing against local sides, because the pyramid structure we've got at the minute forces clubs that don't have the money to spend money on mediocrity just to avoid relegation. I think it's absolutely pathetic from that perspective, and it shouldn't be a case of, you know, a glass ceiling. If somebody wants to go from their division into the Championship, they can apply, and you can look at things like youth structure, you can look at attendances, club engagement with the community and so forth as measures of whether you can move up into the Championship, because that's what people want. People want local derbies. You know, it's not about going from Division 3 to Division 2 when you're that low down in the pyramid. You get away fans going to local games, the club would become part of the community again. And you could then link that in with the youth rugby side of things, because there was an announcement obviously this week about taking the youth from under 20s to under 18s. Now, I remember when I went, like, I was a 16-year-old into youth, and the jump was massive, right? And it was too much. But again, short-term thinking by the WRU, what they should have done is brought in an under-17s and an under-18s, and then possibly a youth structure. Because the gap between 16 and 18 is still big. But all of this should be linked in with the structure below. So you should be thinking things like, you shouldn't be allowed to have a license to have a senior team unless you've got a youth structure. And then you get these negative people saying, oh, well, that's not going to work because there's not enough kids who want to play rugby, which is an absolute load of rubbish. It would force the clubs to engage with the schools, engage with the local communities. The other bit I would do, if we're going to do all this restructuring, and this might be a controversial one, I'd get rid of the 60 cap rule, because if we can't afford to keep players in Wales, if they can get jobs in England and France still play for Wales, I would do it. Now, every single Welsh fan would want the best talent in Wales. I get that. I want to see the best Westphalians playing for the Scarlets week in, week out. But if you can't afford it, something has to give, and you can't just say, I want everything. And for me, I'd rather see maybe 8, 9 of our highest paid players playing in England, playing in France, because that would save you the need to lose potentially a team like the Dragons. We've also seen people like Dan Bigger going to England and improving. We've also seen people like Rhys Carey coming back to Wales and not playing as well as he was in England. Nick Tompkins had that year with the Dragons. He was rubbish. He's back with the Saracens now and he's playing fantastically well. And my final point on all this, and again, I'm making some assumptions here, right? But I bet you there's nothing in there about fan engagement. There's a brick wall between the union and the fans. Now, you don't need to go very far to see how things can change. You look at what's happened in the football, right? 20 years ago, 25 years ago, Welsh football was in the same position as Welsh rugby, a total disengagement between the fan base and the football association. Especially if you go back to, you know, how they messed around with Terry Orath and things like that. It was dreadful how they managed the situation. But in the last 10, 15 years, there's been a sea change, and that's down to somebody like, you know, Ian Gwyn Hughes, who's come in from the BBC. They've totally changed engagement within the football pyramid. If you're part of the red wall in football, you can engage with the football association, whether that's through social media or, frankly, if you phone up and you've got a problem with your ticket, they'll sort it out. And I won't name her, but there's somebody in the ticket office that all the Welsh fans know. You phone her up and she sorts it out for you. You cannot do that with the Welsh Rugby Union. There is a brick wall and you can't get through that brick wall. And all those elements have got to change. And all those things I would change first before even considering getting one of the regions. So sorry, Jed, that's my rant, but I'm just really annoyed about it.
Well, thanks for listening to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. We'll be back next week where we'll just let Matt go again. There's so much to get your teeth stuck into there. I want to just drill down a bit on that that point you made around the Premiership, the Championship, and then kind of below that having a much more local structure for community rugby. Because Murph, you know a lot more about that than I do. What do you think about, you know, about that as part of a bigger restructure?
It gets trickier, that part of the game, the bigger your club is. Clubs up the road from my club got massive engagement because all the locals feel like they own it. My club in particular, I could use other examples, obviously, but my club in particular has attracted Cardiff Rejects, the best players from the Vale of Glamorgan, hoovered up spare talent from clubs around Cardiff who was, you know, if you're too good to play for Llanisian or Llandaff or whatever, you come to the Wanderers and so on. With then other players who were like, for example, boys are from the lower end of the valleys who are working in Cardiff, well, that somehow end up playing for us. So we that is the spot we hold. And when it comes to the minis and juniors side of rugby, we're a bit of an island in Ely, if that makes any sense. So it's always, when I was in it, I came from the juniors at the Wanderers and all the way through, never played for anyone else because I don't really believe in other rugby clubs. The junior setup in my club was awful. It was useless, but it still churned out players who ended up being first team players. In other periods, it's been amazing. We've had I think Corey Allen and Dan Fish were in the youth team at the same time. We won the Welsh Cup, and there was a huge junior section where we were turning people away. And then all that happens is the parents that were running that junior section, their kids grow up, and then their expertise disappears, and it can all collapse again, and you're back to square one. And even when the junior section is going well, and even when the junior section is poor, it doesn't seem to make any difference to how many players we turn out for the seniors, if that makes any sense, because people like Dan Fish and Corey Allen were never going to play for the Wanderers, not for long anyway. So it's complex, and some clubs, I don't want to name them because they've been in the news this week or last week, don't do really any. They're at the high end of the Championship. They don't do any junior sides or any youth rugby or any. They might engage with other local clubs on that level, but they don't do anything in their own colours. So, like I say, it is much easier for smaller clubs to do that, especially if they, you know, like are the centre of the town or village that they inhabit. But I don't disagree with the point. It's definitely a weakness for us and a weakness in rugby. a lot of clubs within Cardiff, and I only know this because I have to go through East District meetings. I said that as like as it was a punishment, but I go to East District meetings, complain that they can't field youth teams because of academies. So academies is the new, it's this era's thing. All the best players will get hoovered up from every local junior section, end up in academy at either the region or the college. It could be, you know, sometimes they join in at Whitchurch High School around here or Caldwell College or whatever. And if you take four or five of the best players out of youth teams, suddenly all the average players fizzle out and don't want to play anymore. And that's their complaint. So it is hard, even if you want to keep a youth team going in this era. But I totally agree with the point. On the broader, just going back on the broader point, because it was, I'm not even sure if I can remember everything we covered, but the one part about restructuring regional rugby, the best take I've heard this week is the WRU will never get a good solution in place for regional rugby until the WRU is reformed itself. So I personally think there are people in the WRU, you know, because it's just basically committee men like me who've been elected to run the WRU. That's all it is. It's just blokes like me, albeit probably better committee men than me. I believe there's people in and around the WRU and on that board who hate regional rugby. I don't know what they think they're going to have instead or what they would rather have the past where all the clubs were bankrupt because they couldn't afford the professional game. I don't know. But I suspect there's men in and around high positions in the WRU who hate Dragons, Cardiff, Ospreys. They just hate the whole idea. But I don't know what they think they're going to achieve with their standpoint.
But this is what it all comes down to, I think. It's, again, really interesting points in there, Murph. But it's like, you know, whatever we've been, 20 years with this now, and no one believes this is ideal. And if there was a load of money knocking around, then I think every single one of us would love to see club rugby back, right? It would, you know, it'd be fantastic. But it's literally never going to happen. So that the, you know, we've kind of gone through 20 years of it now, and for what? You know, if you start peeling it away and reducing by one, well, how long till you're down to two regions? And realistically, none of this is going to work until they're properly funded. And that money either needs to come from the private sector, which it doesn't look like it's forthcoming. You know, the Dragons haven't been able, admittedly, that, you know, the worst side in Wales, haven't been able to secure, funding to become a private entity again. Or it's got to come from the union where they're properly reimbursing players, reimbursing the regions for access to the players. And, you know, I get it. Times are really tight, and we've got to look at this. You've got to look at it with a proper kind of commercial hat on. But there just needs to be a question. Go, look, do we actually want this to work or not? And realistically, the union has to ask themselves that. And you're absolutely right. If they do want it to work, then the very first step is that restructure, and the very first step of that is creating a clear link between, severing the link between community rugby and professional rugby, because we are trying to create, you know, competitive professional leagues here, and that's not to say that community rugby doesn't matter, because it really does, but the two things are not, are not linked enough. Do you know what I mean? That it's just having community clubs making the big decisions on the outcome of professional rugby just makes absolutely zero sense. And I don't see a situation where we make proper progress until that goes.
Well, look at Scotland and look at Italy, isn't it? They've got a couple of professional teams each, and they're really struggling in terms of volume of players required when it comes to things like the Six Nations. They might, you know, Scotland have done better the last few seasons, had a few good players coming through, but they haven't got the depth and talent. We go down to two, we'll still have our sort of, Fijian props and our Tongan back rowers. So you've got even less to choose from. And that's a really difficult one when you're not all sort of like synergized looking in the same direction. Because even if you look at, you know, the Scarlets this season, Callum Mahoney, Lucy and so forth, have been our best players. So from a selfish perspective, some of these foreign players, they play week in, week out. You've got Cardiff, who've signed Faletau, Liam Williams for next season. how many games are they going to actually play? And that's the sort of the juxtaposition between the regional game and the national demands on these players that you're always struggling with. But for me, you cut down to three, and in 3 or 4 years' time, without reform, we'll have the same conversation, and they'll be talking about cutting down to two, and it'll be East Wales and West Wales, which is, I think, what Moffat wanted, wasn't it, when he first started talking about the professional game and so forth. And yeah, there'll be the lack.
But there was
wasn't
in North Wales as well in his calculation. And then because he wasn't from here, he realised there wasn't enough people living in North Wales to sustain a professional regional side. So.
And look, I think North Wales will be mentioned this time again. And with all due respect to North Wales as a region, the fact that you've got a couple of celebrities now owning Wrexham Football Club, I think there's going to be a massive draw towards Wrexham in the next few years. In the same way as, obviously, you know, the Dragons got to fight professional football as well within the city, which is something they didn't have to do, sort of like, you know, 10 years ago. So, but for me, you cut now and you cut again. And coming back to the point about, you know, the clubs, people of a certain age remember the clubs. You know, my first season ticket was with Llanelli. I remember my first game, late 80s, Llanelli Bridgend, absolutely amazing, sucks you in, doesn't leave you, sort of thing. But if you're under 30 or roughly about 30, you're not going to remember professional clubs, are you? It's all about the regional game.
Yeah.
So, again, what are people thinking about in terms of their audience and the audience for the future? We've invested 20 years into this structure. Mm-hmm. A fifth of a century has been invested into it. And even Stuart Barnes, I was reading something a couple of days ago, harping on about the, you know, professional clubs and so forth. We'd love that. We'd love 12 professional clubs in Wales and fighting each other week in, week out. It would be amazing. Mm. I remember as a kid, you know, you'd go down the Knoll, you'd go down St Helens and stuff. You'd go to the away games, which you don't really do anymore when you're following regional games. If you might, you know, I'll have one trip to France every year watching the Scarlets and so forth, and that's it. It's totally different in terms of mentality, but it's the audience. And we've got to be thinking about the new generation coming through, and that's not going back to a club structure, sorry.
No. And they don't, and you're exactly right. And the thing that I think illustrates this the most, right, is I know there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stick whenever the Valleys are mentioned in relation to professional rugby and regional rugby and stuff like that. And, you know, we've said it before, you're never going to get Ponty, diehard Ponty fans ever supporting a team based in Cardiff, right? But there's enough bloody players playing for Cardiff who've come from Ponty. You know, that's the thing. And I'm not saying that's right. And again, if there was enough money, I'd love to see a region in the Valleys as well. But that just kind of goes to show you that those kids have grown up and are now playing for Cardiff. They're not going to be held back by a club allegiance to a club that isn't as visible as it once was and isn't a professional entity anymore. And I think that's, you know, it's not perfect regional rugby. It's not, but it's like, but it's the, having invested, as you said, 20 years into it, do you want it to work, or do you just want to go, well, let's wind it down and we'll end up like, you know, I'm trying to think now, but yeah, kind of like Argentina, you know, all your players play abroad now and that's what we'll have, and we'll just have the national team. And I don't know, part of you wonders, well, do the union even care, you know, would that work for them?
Yeah, the Pontypridd or Valleys rugby situation is potentially about to get worse because of the proposed restructuring of the Premiership, where they cut it down to 8 or 9 teams, which means two teams from each region in the Premiership, and then the rest are in the Championship with my club. The sums there are the three Premiership clubs in the Cardiff region is Cardiff, Pontypridd, Merthyr. One of those has got to drop out. The best way to do it would be for Cardiff to drop out, because Cardiff already exists as a regional side, and likewise Newport and the Dragons. But then the name Newport disappears from, disappears into the Championship, not out of existence, but into the Championship, but from top flight rugby, as it were. And the same for the Scarlets region, because they've got Llandovery, Carmarthen Quins, and Caerphilly. So I don't know. I don't know. If, if that's officially announced yet. I might have just grasped up the WIU.
Yeah. I think we've all heard.
Yeah, the rumour's out, but it's not official. It was supposed to be official a few weeks ago, but the press officer was on a day off, and nothing actually got announced. But it's in its final throes, from what I can tell, that decision. So that's going to make even more rugby dinosaurs pissed off in the valleys. And you have to remember that, you know, us, our age, and the type of people who are still cheesed off with the loss of professional rugby and Pontypridd are dinosaurs, because like you say, 20 years, and I think I might be repeating myself, but there's boys in the first team at my club who can't remember before the smartphone. Never mind Premiership regional rugby. They can't remember life without a smartphone because they're still teenagers, 18, 19, 20. And so that's 15 years ago, I think-ish, that the smartphone came out. And so their life has been, this is not a good look on the podcast, but face in a phone. That's what, you know, they've never known any different. And so if they're in that, if generations move on that quickly, this regional thing is not even the older players in my club remember before regional rugby, unless the ones in their 30s will. But you know, so that's how quick time moves on with rugby. There's whole swathes of kids who, let's be honest, that's the target audience for sport. Yeah. Don't have any idea what we're talking about. They don't know what we're on about when we say professional clubs. They don't know.
Well, this is it. Crucially, all rugby is struggling with attracting a younger audience. Yeah. It's got an increasingly aging population and attendance base. So it's something that's got to be addressed. And yeah, you know, you're right, Murph. There's, you know, that it's how do you attract that that generation to watch it? And I think we've said this before, right? And while we're talking restructuring, it's not just Welsh. It's rugby as a whole has to restructure. It's mad, like you say, right? If you sign. Imagine in football, and football is far from perfect, but imagine, you know, Manchester United or Man City signing the equivalent of Toby Faletay. You know, when Man City signed Jack Grealish, they go, oh, well, actually, you can't have him for 75% of the season, but, you know, he will be available to play Bolton in the League Cup and to play, you know, and to play four games at home throughout the whole season. Yeah. It's madness that there's too much rugby played, and so much of it is lacking in meaning, and none more so than the bulk of the rugby that we see in the URC.
The issue there, though, is that in football the clubs generate the cash, and in rugby the clubs don't generate the cash. As far as Matthew's point about going to watch away games, it feels like a different time now doing that in Wales. But the only way we get close to having that back is to be playing Gloucester, Bath, Bristol, and then you could follow your club for half a season just in those three fixtures, home and away. And then obviously the Welsh Derby's on top, but they just don't need us. So why would they?
That opportunity's gone, isn't it? You know, we all look back now when we were offered, what was it, five slots or something in that British League years ago? Yeah. Could you imagine how fantastic that would have been now? And the difference is, you know, the generation of funds in England is totally different because their players do go back after internationals and play straight away. And that gets people through the doors as well. So, you know, okay, I know I'm a little bit Scarlet's biased at times, right? But you can go to Scarlet's and you can go a whole season without more or less seeing any of your stars. We all know the Liam story, right? But plenty of the other ones, you just don't see them. And the guys you watch are people like, you know, Steph Hughes, people like that, who turn out week in, week out. In England, you get the stars. So no wonder more people come through the turnstiles. But the point about Ponty very quickly, sometimes it's used as the negative, or Ponty get, you know, good crowds, but they're not engaged with the region. Well, for me, that's a positive because we want good crowds throughout Welsh rugby and we want good community engagement throughout Welsh rugby. And coming back to the point we made you earlier on, and Murph, I get your point completely about the, you know, youth structures and so forth. But if you kept players in rugby for longer within the youth structure, they could be more engaged with their local club and more likely to be there in the future. I was told last week there isn't a single youth team in the Almond Valley, a valley that's produced people like Gareth Edwards and Shane Williams. There isn't a single youth team, I was told last week there. Yeah. And, you know, I think Almond United were the last team to have a youth team. If we're not going to force these clubs into properly supporting youth structure, then people are just not going to come through. And we're going to see it in so many ways, not just in terms of lack of talent coming through, but people not coming through the turnstiles either. And you've got to remember, people like seeing local boys and girls playing for their team as well.
Definitely.
And there's a big attraction towards locals, and that's the thing. And local players tend to want to play for their clubs if you can give them the opportunities. Again, looking at the Scarlets, people, you know, your Gareth Davises, your Ken Owens, they're club men. They will be with those clubs for the majority, if not the, you know, the longevity of their careers, because they love playing West Wales rugby. And that's what you'd get by having a really good structured youth system that we should be forcing on our clubs.
Yeah, the only trouble is in the old days when there was strong youth teams throughout all parts of the country, the clubs weren't trying. There was no special effort being made. Youngsters were just turning up. When I was playing youth rugby, there'd be a new kid turning up once a fortnight wanting to have a run out. And I don't know, you know, do we blame Xboxes? I don't know what we need to blame, but you know,
it doesn't matter what you blame. It's how you compete against.
Yeah,
it,
competing against,
you know,
it.
What I mean is, clubs
are not, the clubs haven't gone lazy. I suppose they had it all their own way in the past. The kids just, there was, when I was playing youth, there was no internet. So maybe I'd have been tempted not to turn up in a piss sweat Tuesday night. I don't know. But it's just more, there's more competition for young people's time these days. And so you're right. Forcing is probably a word that brings me out in a bit of a rash, but greater efforts is hard. I mean, we are hoping to have a youth team running again the season after next season, because we've got an under-15s coming through. But to keep them engaged, we're constantly having to entertain them and bloody, you know, shower them with gifts, and because there's a constant drag of other things for their attention away from rugby. So that is, I think, where sport is. It's just not, well, participation is the underlying problem, and we're battling against this. And of course, the other thing is academies and regional setups encourage elitism. So we could end up like NFL, where no one plays at amateur level of NFL in the States. Mm. You either make it or you don't. And then you go and, I don't know what they do, shoot guns or something. Whatever they do in America.
Play rugby, isn't it? Don't they try and grab some of them to play rugby?
Yeah.
And Murph, I hear you, but that is an easy excuse as well. And apologies if my language has given you a rash. But but honestly, right, if we apologise for it, right, and apologise for the competing things out there, things will never get better. So I would force the clubs, if they want to run senior sides, they have to put the effort in at youth. There'll always be those cases where you can make special dispensations for people who can show that they've tried. I get that completely. But you can't have a whole valley, right?
No. Some
of the best rugby players Wales have ever seen without a single youth team. That's just fundamentally wrong.
Someone should be doing a survey of where those kids are going these days, because like I say, in the past clubs weren't having to try, it was just a natural kids would just turn up. I'd be interested to know what that valley, where they all go.
Maybe we can conduct some more research with Oakwell Sports and we'll have a whip round and get 25 grand into that, because you're right, you know, that Dan Killick doesn't get out of bed for 25 grand, does he? And that's why we haven't seen hide nor hair of him on this podcast for the last 4 months. So on that beautiful note of getting a dig into our lesser spotted co-host, we're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we can continue to chat about this story, and we'll also take a quick look back at some of the on pitch rugby from this weekend, and we'll do all of that after this quick break. Welcome to the second half of the Attacking Scrum podcast. I feel like this might be my turn for a rant now, Matt, because I'm gonna take a look at some of the listeners' questions that we've had in, right? And this one is from Sean Hughes, and it says, has Wales Online been too cosy to the WRU over the last 10 years? And again, like, we've all, you know, we all read Wales Online, not out of necessarily desire, but there's a lot of rugby stuff on there of varying quality, right? And I think it's an organisation that's part of you know, part of what was the Trinity Mirror Group. They're under big commercial pressures. And they, you know, I think all the journos down there have a very tough job. And that part of it means they have to churn out some regurgitated stories and some lists and things like that. And, you know, I think in amongst that, they've got a bunch of rugby journalists who genuinely care about the game and work really hard. My real problem this week has been the lack of any substance coming from the BBC in relation to this story. You know, it's a story that's big enough to be picked up by all the broadsheets, you know, the UK London orientated broadsheets, for them to run it. Yet we've had 20 minutes on the Scrum 5 podcast. We had, you know, 5 minutes at half time during the Cardiff Zebra game with two current employees of Regions, so they're not going to say anything. You know, and then there's no Scrum 5 this weekend, you know, which should be the place where where these kind of matters were debated.
I bet the presenters are delighted they don't have to talk about rugby this weekend.
Well, yeah, I know. I did think that when I turned on the Cardiff game on Friday night. I bet Gabby Yorath was thinking, God, why did I take this gig? But then, you know, they didn't cover it. And again, you go back 15 years, and we all know that, you know, the Alfie incident and stuff like that. But Scrum 5 was appointment viewing because it tackled the big issues. And, you know, it subsequently has week by week turned into the one show. And it's just that I just don't think is good enough. And it's the fact that I can understand why you're going to need a good relationship with the union to a certain extent. But this, you know, this is a big enough story that needs to be covered properly, and I just think that's really shortchanging fans. And I'm not a, you know, I'm a massive fan of the BBC as an institution, as the quality of output that it delivers. But I just feel like that's something that needs to be addressed. You know, BBC Wales Sport should have their hands all over this story and getting to the absolute crux of it. You think back to when regional rugby began, and I seem to remember, was it maybe even a Cardiff Ponty game, but I remember Scott Gibbs talking about it at half time with Eddie Butler, and it was, you know, and it was like there was no filter on there. You know, the gloves were off. They were talking about how, you know, the problems that there were going to be ahead, and I just feel like, you know, you're not getting that anymore. We're kind of getting the cheerleading stuff around the URC, a league that, you know, a league that, yeah, it needs its cheerleaders, it's got its problems, but I don't think that should be the role of the national broadcaster. So to me, I think, you know, I don't really have a problem with Wales Online this week, unless they haven't been attributing quotes to people. For me, it's the silence from the BBC is deafening.
I leave that to you, Matt.
Well, do you know what? I totally agree, Jed. And what I don't get is that they've interviewed a lot of people. Ruddock, I think, was interviewed a few days ago. And it seems like a lot of people know what these six proposals are, okay? But we've only heard one of them, I think, I'm right in saying. Now, if I was a journalist, I'd be thinking to myself, this is the biggest story that's hit Welsh rugby in a good few weeks, right? I'd want to be there, explain to everybody else, everybody, what the other five proposals are. We haven't heard them, I believe. Why has nobody got to the bottom of that? It's not been the Wales Online, it's not been on the BBC or anything like that. Even though they're interviewing people who seem to know, is it that, you know, they're not asking the right questions, they're not doing enough digging? It just seems a bit shoddy, would be my take on that. And it all feels very superficial. And it's as if, let's not upset anybody. There, you know, we've given you a little bit, now we've moved on to the next thing. It just seems very superficial. I'm frustrated. I want to hear the other six proposals to see if they're as good as mine, and I'm pretty sure they won't be. But there doesn't seem to be any appetite out there to get to the, you know, to the crux of it.
But again, yeah, I just think it comes down to, you know, what you want to do with your media outlets. You know, you can keep everything as cozy as you like around games. I just don't, I don't see what that's gonna do. You know, all the current players, especially if they're employed by a region, are going to be ultra cautious because they're not going to say risk anything that either slags off their employers or the union. And I completely get that. I don't blame them in that. But maybe they're not the guys to book for that weekend. You know, maybe have a journalist on there who can be objective about it. Well, or have someone who's not afraid to kind of shoot their mouth.
Well, they did, by mistake, they had Peter Jackson on a good couple of seasons ago. Now, Peter Jackson came on and said a few home truths, and there was a massive response on Twitter, like, thank God someone's asked some awkward questions. But then they had him on all the time, and then he started going off piste a little bit on other subjects and stopped going on for a bit. But yeah,
which was the only part of Scrum 5 in the last 15 years where it kind of had, and even then he was basically just saying that the team weren't up to it at that point, wasn't it? You know, it was nothing overly controversial. It was getting fed sound bites.
It was just not completely vanilla, which is what the rest of it is all the time. If you have current players on there too much, they're not going to say anything controversial because, you know, it's in their interest not to. As far as BBC and Wales Online, one of the issues with BBC is it's a conflict of interest because they broadcast the matches from WIU, not all of them, but some of them. So,
well, they could be fighting. I could understand that 5 years ago, but they've lost the Autumn International.
Sure, but some games get on BBC too, and maybe they just fight shy of any upset in the WIU. Not that the WIU are swamped with buyers, I don't imagine. But also, Wales Online, I've stopped. You know, certain apps on your phone will recommend news articles from different sources. I've blocked Wales Online on mine, mainly because it's usually the person who won an Oscar last week has got a grandmother from Abertrida or something like that. Then that'll be their idea of a Welsh news article. And so therefore, obviously Simon Thomas and various people there are really good rugby writers, but for that reason, I blocked them and I go towards the national because it's things that actually matter in Wales rather than some bloody celebrity gossip shite that I don't care about in the Wales Online. And again, being owned by Trinity Mirror Group just means it's inherently not Welsh in any way. So I blocked it. And therefore, there's not much. The thing is, with the WIU and regional rugby, it doesn't need any extra criticism. There's plenty flying about, but you probably do need high-level journalists investigating it. And you're right, that is probably missing.
And the other thing that I think is quite interesting on this, and this might be where I get a bit conspiracy theorist, flat earther about it. I think if you look back at the time, you know, after that big Alfie blow-up, when things became a lot more sanitised on Scrum 5 after that, well, it was Nigel Walker in charge of BBC Wales at that point in time. And I'm pretty certain he was the one who shook it up and removed Butler from his... I'm pretty sure Eddie Butler is quoted as saying as much, that he was moved aside, under Nigel Walker's tenure. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's... You know, he was still a very good links down there. But, you know, whether or not this is just me kind of reading too much between the lines, I think it's really disappointing that, given that there were, you know, because I messaged you, Murph, and said, is my Skybox playing up or is Scrum 5 not on this week? And you said, oh, well, you know, they don't always come on during the European knockout phases. But there has been two games, you know, which they have.
Are they rearranged fixtures this weekend, or were they originally?
They are.
So that's
rearranged
probably
fixtures,
why they
still have.
But there's a Welsh derby. You know, there was a Welsh derby that should have been shown.
Yeah.
Even if it's buried at 11 o'clock, you know, when it used to be on late on a Sunday night.
It's buried at about 9-10 o'clock on S4C, the highlights of that game, but not a magazine program of the topics surrounding the sport at the moment, so it's just literally highlights. So I would, having gone over what we've just said about the situation, I would mind if there was loads of presenters and journalists who were just delighted that they don't have to cover the topic. We've been going around. I mean, the situation and fans and everyone has been going round and round in circles about it for decades now, and I would imagine a lot of people are just sick of it, the ones who have to report on it. And there is also an issue where certain presenters are fighting shy of criticism of the WIU, and you know, South Wales and rugby in Wales generally is a bit of a goldfish bowl, so I wouldn't be surprised if they all luncheon together.
I think it's the obsession as well with current players. You know, they. I think, Jed, you mentioned it. You know, they've got vested interests in the conversations at the end of the day. And it, for me, sometimes I'll switch on something like Scrum 5. You'll see two current players and you'll think, they'll have nothing to say. And you'll have watched the programme and they'll have said nothing in that period of time. And, you know, things need to change. You know, when Eddie Butler was presenting it, you know, everybody loved it, didn't they? At the end of the day, because he'd ask the awkward questions and you'd have pundits on there who'd have an opinion. But now it's just all vanilla.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I remember doing a show with Dan, one of our very first shows, so 5 years ago, debate, and we did a whole hour on this, talking about how, you know, if you continue down the trend of just having current players in there, then it's going to be, you know, you're never going to get the difficult questions asked, yet alone answered, because they've all got a vested interest. And you also look the way that other sport has changed in the way that it's covered. You know, you look at the way that Sky cover football, and it's, you know, it's forced the hand of the likes of the BBC to change and adapt, because, you know, you have Roy Keane laying it down at half time, or Gary Neville, or whoever that, you know, whoever the pundits are. And it, you know, that works for Sky because it creates more theatre. You know, in the 2 minute, you know, a Roy Keane 2 minute rant at half time is again social media gold for them. But yeah, I just don't see. You know, whenever I'm watching a game now, it's normally on Sky Plus, and I will zip through anything that's not the game. I'll go, right, okay, let's kick off, bang, and then from kick off through to half time, zip, get through the adverts, get past all the half time because no one will be saying anything of any great note. Bang, back to the game. And then, yeah, you know, Scrum 5, it's, you know, it's become a similar problem. So, yeah, quite whether that'll get addressed at any point, I don't know.
It's Sam Warburton they need, because he does the English version, doesn't he, I think?
BT Sport as well, yeah.
Because
he does BT Sport and he does Rugby Special during Six Nations.
In fairness, you know, he brings the issues to the fore, doesn't he? And he sees things, and when he does, you know, his analysis, he's brilliant. I just don't understand why they haven't signed him up and got him on there regularly.
Probably went to the highest bidder, I'd imagine.
Yeah, probably, Murphy, right. Shame, though, for us.
Yeah. And, you know, he does it without being antagonistic to anyone. He just, you know...
It is a completely objective voice in it. You know, it doesn't matter. If someone is having a particularly good game, he'll hone in on them. There's no bias either way. And it's, you know, you're absolutely right. I think he's a cut above. But, yeah, there we go.
One of the wondrous finest to have, you know. Good.
Exactly. That's probably it's probably many a chat with you, Murph. I'm sure that has helped shape.
I'm so old, I don't even know Sam Warburton.
Yeah. Right, we're going to take another question that we've had in from Chris, which is an interesting one, right? Which just simply says, "What happened to the 81 million from CVC?" Now, this is a really interesting point because I think that the, you know, obviously the pandemic has had a massive effect on the union. And, you know, again, I think that could have been handled better. The shackling the regions with the, you know, with the repayments of the loans, for example, it looks just like passing the buck to me. But with this, you know, obviously people are quick to point at the hotel and things like this. And I try and be objective about it and say, right, you know, in the long term, is that going to make money? They spent so much money on it, and it only makes money if you've got a super successful national side, and you're able to sell out the stadium itself, and then attract in the kind of clientele who are going to be able to frequent the hotel itself. I just don't see how that's going to make, you know, that's going to make back any real substantial money. And you just think that. Yeah, I don't know. My gut just says, well, the CVC money has gone into these other ventures because it feels like there is either a thought of the union that the regions aren't my problem, or there just isn't that much appetite for it. You know, it to succeed completely.
After you, Matt.
Right. Okay.
Well, I can go first if you want.
No. I'm happy to go. I'm not quite sure where I sit on this one, because in some ways, right, I'll be controversial and say if you diversify a little bit in terms of your portfolio, you're trying to protect yourself in future years. So in theory, if you've got a successful hotel that's bringing in revenue, that can be reinvested into Welsh rugby. So in theory, I get it. But I think the point is something you just touched upon, Jed, is I think people are so fearful and sort of paralyzed by the whole regional piece. They're grabbing onto anything to you know, throw their energies behind because they're worried about dealing with the regional piece. That, you know, the structure, the regional piece, that's what the priority should be. And I, you know, you see on social media all the time, fans getting really frustrated by the hotel. Completely get it, because they just feel as if the union is looking at something else rather than dealing with the issue. And I think that's a fair challenge. Just from a purely business perspective, if it pays its way, you get dividends from it, and you can reinvest that in Welsh rugby, I'm actually not against it.
No, I was going to say, along the same lines, building a hotel in Cardiff is a safe bet. there has been a massive shortage for years. And you know, even Easy Hotel have pulled up recently, and others have sprung up, like converted the old Coal Exchange to a hotel. And every time there's an event, and there's lots, you know, a big event in Cardiff, you can triple the price. And it's difficult to cock that up as far as business goes. But if anyone can, the WIU can. They might have.
Well, the Coal Exchange did go bust during the pandemic. Yeah, yeah. I mean, admittedly, during a pandemic before.
And
it
of course,
properly,
only a small section of that building is actually a hotel. There's lots of. It's still derelict. So the risk, I suppose, with that building is they might have pitched it too exclusive. There's everything else, believe me, every other square inch of rentable rooms and all the Airbnbs are sold out every Six Nations game. And any, you know, if there's a bloody gig on in the stadium or there's a half marathon or anything, every hotel room is full and you can't get in the city. It happens all the time. Well, even when the Six Nations, this is getting too Cardiff-centric, I know, but even when the Six Nations finishes, the hotels are full with stag do's and hen do's for weeks, every weekend, weekend after weekend, for the right the way through until the weddings start and then they fizzle out. So that's how short we are of hotels. So building a hotel should be an open goal. And like I say, the only issue there is the one Matthew made. Why are they looking that way when there's some pretty major problems going on? And the risk is that they've made it too boutique, too exclusive for Cardiff City Centre, when basically everyone's just going to stagger in drunk and collapse on their bed.
Yeah, no, I think that's the point I was trying to make that you made better. I think Murph it's pitched as an exclusive hotel. And maybe it'll pay its way through fucking a cheering concert and the rest of it. So
something's been needed to be done with that building for decades. You know, there's a whole load of amazing, solidly built buildings on Westgate Street which have done nothing for years on end. So something hadn't happened. It probably might have been cheaper and just probably nearly as profitable to just convert it to apartments if they own the building, use the money, convert it to apartments, sell them all, you've got all your money back, and then straight back into funding the salaries of players in Wales. But
they'd have probably just wasted Murph if they'd have done that. They'd have made a good return, but it would have all gone. And in fairness, you know, I think Murph, you mentioned football earlier on, didn't you? You know, Stamford Bridge, great example. I've stayed in the Stamford Bridge Hotel. You know, it works in football. And when you're looking at, you know, similar models, I suppose, using the stadium as the pull. I do know they've pitched this one really high. I know people who've gone there for food and things like that, and it's really on the high side of things for Cardiff. But like I said, if it pays its way, and we'll know in a year's time when he publishes his first annual report and so forth, if it pays its way, I'm actually not against it. And it does mean that the idiots in the WRU can't waste all the money in one go. It's an asset, isn't it, for the next bunch of idiots that come in.
I think that's a completely fair point.
It doesn't, mind you, it doesn't answer the full question, because I don't think the full amount of money that they received from CBC went into that hotel. I think I did hear a figure, but it was nowhere near as much as that. Was you say 81?
81.
It wasn't that much. Yeah. So there's the question's still open. It's not all soaked up by the hotel.
And there's a question there that maybe the BBC should be asking.
Yeah,
exactly. Should we finish in the last 10 minutes by talking about a few on the pitch matters? I mean, it's been a phenomenal weekend for rugby, including a penalty shootout, which I never thought we'd get to see again. Unfortunately, I haven't seen that game. All I've seen is the shootout of it. But there's been some amazing rugby. But putting that to one side, we're going to concentrate on the Welsh rugby. although, to be fair, an interesting enough Welsh derby today, given that I thought the Dragons were going to take another hide in today. You know, they were pretty competitive during that one, and then Cardiff kind of labouring over the line against Zebra on Friday night. But we've had this question in relation to that one, which I'm going to let Matthew answer first. Not even really a question, but I'm keen to get your opinion on Rhys Carey. This came in from a Twitter user called Indy P. It just says Rhys Carey smashing into defenders and then offloads. Still a young player, going well. Could be phenomenal if he keeps improving his game. Now, my thought is that that's probably a burner account from Murph, who's got a restraining order, right?
Would have been more if it was a burner account. It would be more glowing than that.
Okay, so I think maybe my opinion is slightly different to Murph's, because I think he's fallen backwards since he came back to Wales. I think when he was playing in England, I think he was looking amazing. I think there's real potential there. I think he could be a brilliant prop for us for years to come, but I personally think he's fallen back since he's come back to Cardiff. Now, Murph, you can tell me how I'm wrong.
You know, you're not wrong, but he's, I would say, in the last 2 months, his games and his scrum, more importantly, his scrummaging, if he's going to be a fixture in the Welsh team, of being... up to scratch, if he's going to be first choice, I would say. He had a really good scrummaging performance against Thomas Francis. Whether it was legal or not is not the point, because people cheat against our scrum every freaking match. So, you know, part of elite level. Ellis Genge is another one. Ellis Genge is an amazing player, but he does not scrummage fairly. And that's because he would get exposed if he did, you know. And so that's half the game for a lot of them. And if he's 24 now, it's taking him a while. If he's picked that up now, Rhys Carey, he's ready to go, because his carries are better than most number eights in Wales. All number eights in Wales.
There are no number eights in Wales, are
there? Yeah, Callum Mahoney, you know. He
I meant Welsh against, runs.
Yeah, and so did I. Against Munster... He absolutely, like, flattened someone in the build-up to a try in that Munster game. Obviously, the rest of the game was not great from Cardiff's point of view. And again, there's some huge hits coming in. If anything, he's trying to hit too hard and can sometimes get slipped out of the tackle, if you know what I mean, because he's coming in so hard it just bounces off him. So that's something to tidy up on. But I think he's the best... Look, when you're playing in the Saracens side, I mean, Ethan Lewis is in the Saracens side and looks great. He's not first choice, but when he's in there, he looks amazing. The Cardiff had to let him go because he was not cutting the mustard at Cardiff. So, you know, there's when you're surrounded by an amazing pack, you're just gonna look better. And Rhys Carey is not surrounded by an amazing pack at Cardiff, so. I just think he's reaching the potential I thought, because we just don't, like, at under 20 level, he was in a scrum with Liam Belcher and Azzurati, I think.
Azzurati,
and they were stuffing everyone in the scrum at under 20 level. It just doesn't happen for Wales under 20s. They have good scrums, but they were battering everyone. And it was one of the Grand Slams he might have done well in, or one of the World Cup years he might have gone well, beaten in the final or something. I can't remember now. But that it was on the back of that kind of forward power and some other good players, obviously. And it just, at the age of 19, I was like, holy shit, who's this? Because he looked like he went to my daughter's school, and the headmistress, Izzy, I think I've said this on here before, said, one year we...
Be careful, Murph, because I had to edit one of these out at some point. So,
one year we broke up for summer, and when we came back, it was like there was an extra teacher in the school, because there was this freaking giant knocking round, and he was, you know, he was still very young. So he's just... been massive from early on, and he can only be getting stronger as players do throughout their 20s. So we shouldn't dwell on this player so long, because it's like a mill around my neck that he hasn't become what I said he would five years ago. But I think he's getting there.
We all know that props mature, and I agree. I actually agree with you on this, Mark, because you mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, didn't you? And I am. I've subsequently watched the game against Munster and the game against Zebra, and yes, he will face stiffer tests at international level. But it comes down to the way you want to play rugby, and the really successful sides, of which Wales are not one of them, have really mobile, powerful props. You know, we all know what the French front row do. We all know what Tadhg Furlong can do. And, you know, you need ball carriers to get over the line. Yes, you've got to do the nuts and bolts. And I kind of think that Wales are at that point at the moment now where your options in the front row, you go for a really steady one with a kind of Gareth Thomas, Ryan Elias, Tom Francis. And then you have got these younger players developing in Carey and Lake, and you probably still stick with Francis on the tight head as well. But it does give you more options. It's just whether or not it's too much of a gamble. I think in South Africa it is too much of a gamble to throw them in. Certainly to throw both of them in. But you know, I think they're the long term prospects at in the front row for the national side.
Why he kind of is where he is in the pecking order is because he had his opportunity and it just happened to be against South Africa in the autumn, and he got stuffed in the scrum. But everyone gets stuffed in the scrum against South Africa. That's just the way it is. But it's kind of tainted his reputation internationally now. But he's not as bad as that showing. Whoever had got picked that day was in for a hiding. So my opinion on him hasn't changed.
But he'll go on tour this summer, won't he?
I'd have thought so.
When Jones is injured, and might not be fit. So,
it looks as though Wyn Jones probably won't be fit, and he's had a very odd season, hasn't he? I think he could.
I'd love to see Rob Evans back. I know he's not playing enough minutes, but he is the archetypal Wayne Pivac Lucid.
Yeah, brilliant prop in his day, sort of thing, but. Yeah. He just hasn't done it for Scarlets for a few seasons now. I don't know if he's lost the motivation or something, but I'd love to see him back to how he was a few years ago.
He was as big a part of the great side of a few years ago as Tadhg and Barkley were.
Yeah.
But a few injuries, and now he's just not the same man. But I'd love to see him back to, even if he was three quarters of his best, I'd still be, for me, possibly first choice if Wayne Pivac's style of rugby can actually be played in the national side.
The thing is, Murph, we're talking about Lucez here, aren't we? But the problem in Wales is the other side, isn't it? Because with the exception of Francis, we're struggling. I know somebody like maybe Dylan Lewis has improved a bit over maybe the last season, but I'm not a fan. And I just can't think, you know, we've got Samson Lee, obviously, down in the Scarlets, but he doesn't play that often for us anymore, and he doesn't seem to be in Pivac's plans at all. There's nobody else that really stands out.
No, it's Leon Brown after that.
I can't say I'm a fan of Leon Brown. When he comes on, I'm just thinking, what's going to happen in that scrum?
Any time Thomas Francis comes off, it's the same whoever comes on, and especially in South Africa, when you're going to be up against either Oxenchay or Kitshoff, you know, whichever way they go, whichever way they work their bench, our second choice tight end has got to deal with that. So it's a problem whoever comes on for him. Unless we just force Thomas Francis to play 3 80-minute matches, 3 weeks running, no problem.
I got to say, if I was picking the Welsh team, Thomas Francis would be the first player I'd be picking. You know, do you know what I mean? He's just, for me, it's the one position where I don't think there is just any other option. I know we're weak in centre, in the centres and so forth, but Thomas Francis is the one for me.
We're weak in the centres, but it's also to the point where no one really knows what that selection is. And, you know, Pivac has chopped and changed in the centre almost as much as he has at scrum half, and that's the kind of problem. Whereas Tom Francis is the one player you look at and know that he is the best player in his position, and actually outside of that there's not, you know, maybe Josh Adams would be another outside of that. I'm not sure there's that many. Toby, that's there's not there's not there's certainly no you know not a huge amount of certainty about that starting 15.
No. Here's a proper rugby club rumour for you that might just be someone talking absolute shite to me. I mean, buying it, because I've had a couple. If Wales take a good kick in on this South African tour, by that I mean, you know, there's three games and obviously we're going to lose all three, but if there's nothing of any solace for the fans, or if you, you know, if we're looking at 40 points each match or whatever way you want to describe it, it might be, they might call time on Wayne.
Not totally surprised by that, but the only thing I would say is who have we got to take over from him?
Yeah, exactly. Be, yeah.
You know, what are the options? Is it an SOS to Gatland to ask him to come back? I don't think that would be the right
He wouldn't take it, would he?
He's too clever. Without Sean Edwards, he wouldn't
come back. It would jeopardise his legacy to come back and take over this. He got out at the right time.
You see it coming. He knew what was coming, and he got out at exactly the right time. The only other person who knows the structures would probably be somebody like Dai Young to bring in. And I'm not convinced about that either. There isn't anybody.
I'm not sure if I believe the story either, but if it is true, if you go poor Six Nations, lose to Italy, three hidings in South Africa, you know, it kind of does ring true that they might have to say, sorry, you know, we're going to have to let you go. But Jed and I just thought the WIU wouldn't, because it's expensive. Simple as that. We just thought it wouldn't happen because you've got to buy him out to the rest of his contract and get the new guy, and he's gonna, you know. So I just thought maybe this is what they've kept the extra CBC money for.
Well, maybe they have. Murph, the only thing that would be more Welsh than sacking a coach a year and a bit, you know, a year and 3 months out of a World Cup year, is sacking him 3 months before a World Cup. Yeah. So I could realistically see him holding on for another year and then giving it to Alec Evans
in the car park. I think we've covered this before. There's only 12 or 14 games before the World Cup anyway.
Yeah.
12 games. And obviously that probably doesn't include warm-up matches, but, you know, so...
I just think, as disappointing as things have been, and, you know, the Italy one was just, you know, just the fact that we went in there in such a negative fashion with some of the team selection and so forth, you know, that would probably have been the one. It would be, I think that was justifiable in terms of sacking somebody. But if we had three or four options, I'd probably be, you know, inclined, but we just don't. And just bringing in somebody lastminute.com, like you said, it'll be an Alex Evans situation all over again. It'll be a shambles. Mm.
Yeah, unless, hear me out, they got that CBC money and they go, Pat Lam, get rid of Bristol. We don't care how much you like Bristol. Get rid of Bristol. This is an offer you can't refuse in a kind of a Don Corleone way. And you're in. And that's the only way you would get a decent guy at this stage, is to just break the bank on someone. Because... you know, as we know, all their contracts, not all of them, but international contracts run out after the World Cup. So that's when the flood of men come on the market, coaches come on the market. So,
and surely if you're a half-decent coach, thinking there may be some opportunities, would you just not wait the 18 months, especially if you're in a good number already? Hold on, wait 18 months and get a better option.
I said at the same time that when Warren Gatland came, I did say who would want the job. Luckily, they found someone who wanted the job, so hopefully they can again. But we'll see. July, these fixtures against South Africa.
Is it July or June?
July.
Good point. Murph, you always put me on the spot. I never know the bloody answer.
Neither do I. That's why I mean, if Steph had been on, I was going to have to do my own work, because there's a guy who knows his onions. You know,
he's
got
his stats. Like,
well, he's got his finger on the pulse of everything that's going on based on last week's scoop. So,
Well, that's it. Well, he did send his apologies, and so I'm no doubt we'll catch up with Steph over the next week or so. But fellas, thank you. That's been a fascinating chat. Hopefully, you've enjoyed listening to it as much as I've enjoyed being a part of it. So, a big thanks to Matt, and a big thanks to Murph. As always, thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, that's it for this week. We'll be back to talk rugby with you very, very soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com. Sports Social Podcast Network.